This is Audible.
Macmillan Audio presents Una Out of Order by Margarita Montemore. Read for you by Brittany Presley. Time heals all. But what if time itself is the disease? Wim Wenders and Peter Handke, Wings of Desire. Prologue. Una stopped trusting the mirror years ago. After all, it told only a sliver of the story. This isn't me. I am not this woman. The mirror exposed time's passage, yes, but eclipsed her heart's true mileage. The lined face, the extra pounds, the hair chemically treated to hide its gray. Each year the body was hers, but her mind was out of sync with her reflection, always playing catch-up, trying to rearrange the scrambled pieces of her life. It was nobody's fault she had met her future too soon. It should have been decades before she wore this funeral dress. Una threaded the chain of her necklace through her fingers, sunlight glinting off the gold gears of the pendant's clockwork parts. At first, the lost years were agony, the instant loss unbearable. And when the stolen time was returned to her, it was rearranged, always something else taken from her, someone else. But life had a system of checks and balances, and the bad breaks were tempered with good fortune. Even on this bleak day, hidden delights waited to offset the sorrow. She just had to be patient, open. For Una, the pendulum could swing either way. Next year, the face in the glass could be older or younger. It was the closest thing she could imagine to immortality, a game of existential roulette, even though the wheel would eventually stop spinning. I'll see them all again, eventually, and lose them all, again. She tried to accept the mirror's current verdict, to look at herself here and now, to be here now. But today, when her loss was tremendous and threatened to engulf her, she allowed herself to step out of this moment and rewind to a brighter one. Her muted dress replaced with sequins, her bedroom swapped for a mirrored basement, a room brimming with music and color and light, a love like a supernova, a party like no other. I can still get it right. Someday, she would pick up the thread and return to the party. Not a do-over, only a disrupted continuation. No telling when. Someday. Are you ready? Part 1. The Party's Over. 1982. 1818. Chapter 1. The party flowed with cinematic choreography. Plastic cups and beer bottles tilted back in a syncopated rhythm. Clusters of guests bobbed heads and danced to a new wave soundtrack, as if the floor were a giant trampoline, a ribbon of tipsy laughter running through the room. It might have been only a basement in Brooklyn, with mirrored walls and tan carpeting, but tonight it was their Studio 54. Their palladium, their danceteria. A group of 50 with the noise and energy of hundreds, most on their college winter break. They'd come to celebrate New Year's Eve and Una Lockhart's 19th birthday. And they showed up in style, in leather and frills, spangles and mesh, eschewing subdued fabrics for ones that glistened, glimmered, popped with color. The looks flirted with glam, goth, new wave, and punk, even as those who wore them refused to be labeled as one thing. In the corner, Una knelt beside the stereo, sifting through a crate of records. She paused to check her watch, an anniversary gift from her boyfriend, Dale. It had no second hand, which gave the illusion of time moving slowly, sometimes even stopping. A single black diagonal line bisected the silver face dotted with tiny black stars. 9:15 p.m. In less than 3 hours, it would be 1983, and she'd be a year older. She stood, a record in either hand, as Dale, tall and sleepy-eyed, favoring his Brazilian mother's golden complexion, curly pompadour gelled back at the sides, ambled over. The sight of him quickened her breath.
"Hey, gorgeous. What you got there?"
He pointed at the records. "I can't decide which one to play next. Yaz or Talk Talk?" Shoulders tight, she raised and lowered the records as if weighing them.
"I've never seen anyone look so serious about picking a record. It's adorable."
He gave her a quick peck on the cheek.
"How about I take over as DJ and you go dance? I'll play them both."
While she allowed him to take the records, her shoulders remained stiff.
"Okay, I just need to bring down more napkins and ice."
"I'll take care of that too. Your only job is to enjoy the party."
A wink belied his stern tone. Suddenly, one floor up, there was a crashing thud and shatter. Everyone stopped dancing and gazed up at the ceiling. Was it a noisy intruder? Something thrown through a window? Una and Dale rushed to the foot of the stairs.
"Stay here. I'll see what it is,"
Dale said to her.
"I'll come with you."
Forced assertiveness as a cold, dropping sensation overtook her.
"Not again, please."
He paused on the stairs, turned around.
"I'm sure it's nothing, but it'll make you feel better. I'll go find Corey to check it out with me."
"Found him," she pointed over his shoulder. At the top of the stairs, Corey's lanky frame was hunched over in dread, his black Liberty spikes casting geometric shadows on his face.
"Dude, I'm so sorry. I was showing off some dance moves for these girls and the rug got in my way. I fell on top of your coffee table and it, broke. Nobody's hurt, but I'm a dumbass. I'll clean up the mess, replace the table, promise."
Cowering behind Corey were two petite girls wearing too much mascara and lame dresses like liquid metal. Dale thundered up the rest of the steps. As his chest puffed out with a slow, indrawn breath, Una crept up behind him and touched his back. Finally, he sighed and said,
"Hey, it's not a real party until something breaks, right?"
He stepped aside, waved through Corey and the girls.
"I'll clean it up. Just try not to break anything else."
The contrite trio headed downstairs as Una followed Dale to the kitchen. He grabbed a broom and dustpan and grumbled,
"The guest of honor shouldn't be doing cleanup. I can handle the mess."
"Let me help. I've barely seen you since the party started."
She pulled a trash bag from under the sink.
"I know."
Softened by her kindness, Dale dropped his voice to a sexy husk.
"Good thing we saw plenty of each other earlier."
They shared a suggestive chuckle. "I think at one point, the mailman saw plenty of us too." She leaned in and nuzzled against his neck, breathed in his tangy scent of Dracar Noir and Depp hair gel. "Serves us right for leaving the curtains open."
"And still less embarrassing than your mother walking in on us last week,"
said Dale. "Oh, it got even more embarrassing after you left," she flinched, remembering. "Once she made sure I was still taking the pill, she offered to let me borrow her copy of The Joy of Sex."
"I love it."
Dale's booming laugh forced his head back. As much as she would have liked to join in, she could muster only a weak smile. Having a liberal mother had its advantages,
but Una would have preferred more boundaries. Her father, a banker, had provided those until she was 11. Weekly chores, study plans, limited TV time. But once he died, she'd had to set certain rules for herself, which left her mother, a flight attendant turned travel agent, in a role more friendly than parental. She often teased Una about taking things too seriously, whether it was her college courses or band practice, or even her relationship with Dale, urging her daughter to be young and frivolous once in a while. As if you couldn't be serious about something and still enjoy it. As if being young meant being foolish.
"I have an idea,"
said Dale, dropping the broom and dustpan with a clatter. Running over the scales of her sequin dress, he teased the zipper down a few inches and murmured,
"How about we go upstairs?"
He kissed her exposed shoulder and walked his fingers beneath the hem of her dress, upper thigh.
"We could lie under the stars."
The stars he spoke of were indoors, his bedroom ceiling strung with a nest of cables and telephone wires he'd scavenged from his father's electronics store and splattered with phosphorescent paint, creating a three-dimensional cosmic effect. The first time Una had seen that ceiling, it made her gasp in wonder. 2 years on, she still found it awe-inspiring, to say nothing of the man running kisses down her neck.
"Tempting, but it would be rude to the others."
Reluctantly, she stopped his hand from moving any farther up her leg. "With school and the band, it's been ages since I've seen anyone besides you, Corey, and Wayne."
"We saw a bunch of people at CBGB's just a couple of weeks ago."
"Yeah, but we were so busy playing the holiday showcase and meeting with Factory 12's manager, we barely got to talk to our friends."
"Considering what came of it, I don't think they minded. You know what a tour like this could do for our band? After opening for the Pretenders, Factory 12 got signed to Chrysalis, and their first single just hit the top 40.
"They're still not the Pretenders, though. I mean, it's not like we're going to be playing stadiums."
"Right."
The word drawn out as he took a step back, his eyebrow inching up.
"But we've never played for more than a couple hundred people. We've never even left the tri-state area. And Factory 12 could still become huge. Opening for their spring tour is the kind of break most bands never see. I thought you were excited about it."
"I am. I'm not.
She fought to keep a stammer out of her voice.
"It's exciting. It's intimidating. Visiting new cities, playing bigger venues."
"It's more than that,"
he said with a knowing nod.
"You don't have to keep it from me, you know."
Her stomach plummeted. Did he know?
"Keep what from you?"
"You're still shaken up from the mugging after Wayne's party. I saw how you jumped at the crash earlier. You thought it was a burglar. And you're worried about touring, scared something bad might happen again."
"Oh."
Relief ran through her like a faucet turned up full blast.
"Well, it was pretty terrifying."
It happened last month, on the subway back to Bensonhurst. At first, she'd laughed at the man who'd approached them because he wore swim goggles. But she'd stopped laughing when he pulled a switchblade.
"Listen to me."
Dale's voice dove down a few notes as he pulled her in close.
"Nothing would have happened to you. I was ready to do whatever it took to keep you protected. Face a knife, a bullet, anything."
"Thank God all it took was handing over our money."
She shuddered, recalling how paralyzed she'd been, how Dale had to reach into her own coat pocket to remove her wallet and pass it to their goggled assailant. "And good thing I wasn't wearing my watch that night."
"Nothing bad will happen to you on this tour. As long as you're with me, you're safe."
The promise was echoed in his steady gaze and the determined set of his jaw.
"I know."
Her voice caught in her throat at his vehemence. "You don't have to take a bullet for me to prove it."
She traced a finger over the bump in his nose.
I'll also take a hammer if you want to straighten that out for me.
Despite his overall swagger, his nose was the one part of his body he felt embarrassed by. Shush, I have the hots for your nose. And not just because of what they say about big noses. Una's hand hovered at his belt buckle, wanting to travel farther south, but remained still. It would be too easy to lose track of time. Let's go take care of this mess. But first, a little help? Draping her long, chestnut hair over one shoulder, she offered her exposed back so he could zip her up into the dress. Do you think we should have rehearsed more earlier? I know we're just playing for friends tonight, but I still want to impress. After a gig, she'd once overheard someone say she was decent, but hardly the next Joan Jett. Una wasn't sure how much she agreed. Given the chance, she could be a better guitarist than keyboardist, and she was as solid on vocals as Dale. But that comment stuck with her. When she turned around and finished adjusting her dress, he gave a low whistle.
God, you're a knockout. You have no idea.
Even beneath the harsh fluorescent kitchen light, his skin glowed as he shook his head in awe. Pinned in place by the intensity of his dark eyes, words escaped her, and narcotic elation flooded her veins. All she could do was squeeze his hand in response. Dale moved in and spoke low into her ear.
For the record, you're always impressive. I've been impressed by you since I first saw you. And every minute I get to spend with you is the highlight of my motherfucking life.
In the living room, the coffee table lay in a pile of twisted chrome and glass shards.
Fucking Corey, Dale muttered. And you wonder why I talk about finding a new drummer.
As they carefully collected the mangled metal and pieces of glass, Dale continued the now familiar refrain.
He's getting out of control. I don't know if he's been doing more coke, but the drinking alone is a problem. We don't even have a record deal, and he's already acting like Keith Moon. Maybe we should replace him now before he blows the tour for us.
You can't kick him out. He messes up, but he's a great drummer, and he loves the band. Una smoothed his furrowed forehead. Have more faith in him. Back in the basement, Dale headed over to the turntable and Una got herself a drink. She sipped cheap champagne from a plastic cup and observed the colorful crowd before her. Someone tapped her shoulder.
What's with the moping?
It was Wayne, wearing red leather head to toe, his jerry-curled afro shimmering in the light. I'm not moping. But in her voice, a hint of defensiveness.
Oh, come on. You're usually dancing your ass off, smiling like a lunatic. What happened? You and Dale get into a fight?
Of course not. I was just thinking about how much I'll miss everyone, she hurried to add, when we all go on tour.
I'm not really buying it, but I'll let it go.
Una pointed at her empty cup. I need a refill. Back in a sec. She stepped away from Wayne, her mouth dry, faint queasiness undulating within her. What she really needed was a place to quiet her thoughts and set them aside, so she could get lost in the festivities. Across from the basement stairs was the bathroom. A knock on the door yielded no response, so Una turned the handle and stepped inside, where Corey was hunched over the sink.
What the hell?
He bolted upright, eyes bulging. Oops, sir. That was when she saw the hand mirror dusted with white powder. She closed and locked the door behind her. Are you kidding me right now?
It's not a regular thing, I swear.
A blur of his white, panicked hands waving against the orange backdrop of his jumpsuit. That's what you said after you wrecked our Hoboken gig. Do you want out of the band?
Of course not. You think I want to wait tables at Beefsteak Charlie's my whole life?
I don't know. I do know Dale dropped out of college to focus on the band and convinced Wayne to do the same. I know they expect me to take a semester off from Stern to go on this tour. If you want to be part of this, you need to start taking it more seriously. Maybe I should take my own good advice.
She winced at her hypocrisy. What do you think would happen if Dale or Wayne saw this? Anguish contorted his face as he slumped down on the lidded toilet.
You can't tell them. The band is everything to me.
I know. Una stood over him, hands on hips. But band policy is no hard drugs. We all agreed to it. If you can't respect that, maybe you should get out now so they... We have time to find a new drummer before the tour. A prickle of guilt propelled her to rip off a square of toilet paper and wipe stray powder from beneath his nose. I'll keep my mouth shut, but you need to get your shit together.
This is the last time. For real.
He went to the sink, rinsed the remaining cocaine off the hand mirror and held it up.
See?
Her own hazel eyes, raccooned with black liner and heavy with worry, reflected back at her. Don't let me down. The words aimed as much at her reflection as her friend. He rattled off more promises, gave her a grateful smile, and left. Once she was alone, the confining space felt hot, oppressive. Maybe a brief solo respite upstairs would set her right. She was so intent on leaving the basement unnoticed, she failed to spot a figure at the bottom of the stairs until they nearly collided. Una stopped short, inches from knocking her oldest friend to the ground. Instead, she used the momentum to pull the shocked girl into a hug.
Pam! I can't believe you're here! I hoped you'd show up to one of these eventually.
Wow. She gaped at Una and did a sweep of the room. I didn't expect everyone to look so glamorous. Where the other guests tried to look older and more progressive, Pam was a few years behind in both trend and maturity. Hair in the same wedge she'd worn since Dorothy Hamill won gold in 76. Narrow shoulders overwhelmed by the white Peter Pan collar of her brown velveteen dress. Freckled face bare except for a smear of Vaseline across her mouth.
Maybe I shouldn't have come.
What are you talking about? You look so pretty. Taking her friend's hand, she gave a gentle pull. Let me introduce you to everyone. But Pam wouldn't budge.
I called your house earlier and ended up talking to your mom. I said she must be so proud and would probably miss you so much, and she got totally confused. You didn't tell her about London?
London. The word was like a syringe of adrenaline shot into Una's heart. Reversing course, she yanked Pam away from the party, up the stairs into the empty kitchen.
Jeez, Una! You practically dislocated my shoulder.
Nobody knows about London. Not Mom, not even Dale.
Why not?
She tugged on her earlobe, a nervous habit since childhood. It's hard to explain. Una's throat was so parched she could barely speak. Hold on. She got a Coke out of the fridge. A metallic snap as she popped the can open and foam gushed over the side. Hurried sips to tame the spill. I haven't told anyone because I want to make this decision without anyone's input, especially Mom's or Dale's.
What is there to decide? We've been dreaming about going to London since we saw Mary Poppins in third grade, and now we get to live there.
I might still get to see London this summer. Dale and I talked about backpacking through Europe. We even started a list of where we'll go. Paris, Berlin, Brussels, London, all the major cities. They'd also made a list of lesser-known European destinations and sites. The ancient seaside villages of Italy's Cinque Terre, Castellarizzo's castle ruins in Greece, Kutna Hora's chapel decorated with human bones in Czechoslovakia. Of course, this was right before we got the Factory 12 offer, and there's no telling what'll happen on tour. Dale's convinced some A&R rep will go nuts over us and we'll be recording an album for a major label over the summer. Who knows?
Are you serious?
Bafflement contorted Pam's features.
I know this music stuff is exciting, but it's not real life. You could spend months on a sweaty tour bus
and come home broke. Or you could spend a year in London and have every door open for you. A heavy sigh as she glanced down at her Mary Janes. I'd hate to see you throw away a golden ticket. And you're running out of time. The paperwork is due in 2 weeks.
I know. Una pressed the soda can to her hot forehead.
But I haven't figured it out yet. And I'd like one night off from worrying about it. One night to enjoy this party before things get more complicated. Can we go back downstairs and just have some fun tonight? Hesitation in the long breath she took before answering. Fine. But I need the powder room first. There's one up here, down the hall to your left. Don't wait. I'll come find you.
You better not run off on me.
Downstairs, Una glanced at her watch. 11:40 p.m. She went over to the beverage table, where Dale was opening a bottle of cold duck.
You're drinking soda when we have the finest cheap champagne money can buy?
He popped the cork and filled 2 plastic cups, offering her one.
Come on, let's celebrate. You're gonna be the hottest keyboardist in rock and roll history.
Nobody cares about the keyboardist. Her eyes flickered to her discarded Coke before she took a swallow of champagne. It's all about the lead singer, or maybe the guitarist, so either way, it'll be all about you. It can't be about me. I might not be there.
No, it'll be about us.
Dale hooked an arm around her waist, a firm promise that whatever came next, he'd be there for it. Una leaned into him and smiled, believing the promise, reciprocating it. The floor rumbled beneath her feet. Did the subway run below the house? Maybe it was the energy of the partygoers, dancing so hard they were shaking the foundation. Maybe it was the champagne she had earlier and the hyper-focused adoration of her boyfriend. Una's and Dale's eyes glittered when they locked on each other, as if privy to a secret, connected with a bond as intense as murder accomplices. Their faces drew together, and liquid sloshed from their plastic cups as they joined for violent, oblivious kisses that cast the rest of the room in shadow. They kissed like lovers reunited after a battle, even though they spent all but 2 days of winter break together, even though they both lived in Brooklyn and saw each other all the time. Maybe they weren't reuniting after a battle as much as preparing for it. Dale brought his mouth to her ear.
I have a birthday surprise for you. Come on.
He led her to a screened-off corner of the basement used for storage. On top of a stack of plastic lawn chairs was a rectangular box wrapped in silver paper. It's not my birthday for another half hour, she protested, even as she smiled.
I can't wait any longer. Open it.
He held the box steady as she peeled back the wrapping. Inside, a layer of tissue paper revealed a black motorcycle jacket with gleaming silver buckles. Her breath hitched. It's too much. You should be saving up for the tour, she said while fitting her arms through the sleeves over her sequin dress, enveloped by the heaviness and smell of leather.
Dad's been giving me extra shifts at the store, and everyone bought Commodore 64s for Christmas, so I've been making good commissions. Does it fit okay?
It's perfect. Head tilted in mock suspicion, she asked. Is this because you're sick of me borrowing your leather jacket all the time? She'd tell him it was her New York City armor, that she felt safe wearing it.
No way. I just thought you could use some of your own armor, he said.
Her heart a hummingbird flying frantic circles in her chest. She wrapped her arms around Dale and murmured, I'm so damn lucky.
Because I spoil you rotten?
His warm breath made her knees soften and her blood hum. No, because I get to spend the rest of my life with the coolest guy on the planet.
Goddamn right.
He kissed her with a fierceness that made the room go dark and quiet.
I have another surprise for you, but you'll have to wait until after the countdown for that one.
Don't tell me, Holding up a hand, she turned away. While she normally loved surprises, between the Factory 12 tour, Dale's and Wayne's leaving school, and London looming, Una was reaching her saturation point.
"Come on, let's rejoin the others," Dale said.
The basement was illuminated by clear Christmas lights kept up year-round. White dots of light bouncing between mirrored walls put Una in the center of a giant disco ball, or a star on the verge of explosion. The room blurred as she blinked back confused tears. This was the culmination of a perfect year. But it wouldn't last. It couldn't. Not long after this party, the scales would tip. If Una said no to London and took a semester off, she'd lose her academic momentum. But would she lose even more if she said no to the band? If Early Dawning went on tour without her, she'd have to contend with Dale's absence that spring, which would be painful enough, and his disappointment. And that would just be the opening act for her England departure. Could they survive such disruption? Una was at the mercy of a clock whose ticking grew louder and faster with each passing hour. A clock that was about to betray her. She checked the time. 11:55. In the corner of the room, a small color TV broadcasted the ball drop from Times Square. Corey pointed at the screen.
"Is that lit up thing a cherry? This is why people think drummers are dumb. It's an apple, you doofus," Dale said. "You know, like the Big Apple. New York isn't known as the Big Cherry."
It wasn't all that funny, but Una craved a break, so she threw her head back and laughed. Dale took advantage of her exposed white throat and dove in teeth first, playing the amorous vampire. The room tilted as he dipped her, the tips of her hair brushing the floor, then shifted further off its axis. Her laugh morphed into squeals of protest, then quieted into murmurs of pleasure. They engulfed and consumed each other. But wasn't that love? She couldn't imagine it being anything less. And now that she had it, she couldn't imagine choosing to leave it behind. There was that tremor beneath her feet again, the shift and blur at the edges of the room. Had she overdone it with the champagne? Hopefully, she wouldn't be sloppy behind the keyboard and mic when Early Dawning performed a few songs after ushering in 1983. Remember this party. Every second of it. Every person here. They were a motley bunch. As she gazed around the room, Una took mental snapshots of her friends, each strange and talented in their own way. She was sure they would all go on to do great things. But would she? "I wish I didn't have to choose." A recurring wish she'd had these last few weeks, and one she made again now, unaware that every granted wish comes with a hidden cost, every blessing shadowed with a curse. The countdown to 1983 began. 10! She tightened her hold around Dale's waist, felt this was the pinnacle of her happiness. A panicked voice whispered at the edge of her mind. "There's nowhere higher to go." 9! The jacket made her too warm, but she wouldn't take it off for the rest of the night. She also wouldn't tell Dale it wasn't his jacket's heft that made her feel safe, as much as wearing something that belonged to him. Any talisman could have guarded her. A class ring, an old t-shirt, a ratty shoelace. As long as it was his. 8! Unfortunately, there were some things her leather armor wouldn't protect her from.
7!
The tremor intensified, up Una's legs to the base of her spine, an unseen force that threatened to turn her body into a metronome, setting a new rhythm for her life.
6!
She tried to ignore it.
5!
Perspiration trickled down her temples as she counted down the last seconds of 1982 and her own 18th year.
4!
She followed the red glow of the ball descending on TV, crying out with the others,
though hers was a cry of pain.
Three!
A sharp sensation exploded from the top of Una's head and spread down the center of her body, an invisible broadsword cutting her in two.
Two!
Escalating heat stirred within her as particles scrambled to escape and rearrange, but not now and not here.
One!
Part 2. Under Ice. 2015. 51:19. Chapter 2. Una came to with a long gasp, as if breaching the surface after being trapped underwater, left to drown. A second earlier, she'd been surrounded by people and light and noise and warmth. Now, she lay on a plush carpet in a dark room lit by a fireplace, silent but for the crackle of flames heating the drafty space. How much champagne did I drink?
Hey, are you okay?
Asked an unfamiliar male voice. The light, though meager, hurt her eyes. The room wavered before her. She blinked as if recovering from a camera flash. Focus. A man kneeled over her, lean torso clad in a Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon t-shirt, the album covers prism and rainbow bedazzled with small rhinestones. Una propped herself up on one elbow, groggy. Where's Dale? That's when it hit her. She wasn't in Dale's basement, or even his house. Instead, she was in a room that could have been the library out of the board game Clue. High ceilings, dark wood paneling, leather wingback chairs, an antique globe, a bar cart laden with crystal bottles faceted like large jewels. Shelves of books dominated one wall, a rolling ladder offering access to the ones beyond arm's reach. The sort of room where stylish academics could mingle, enjoying fine scotch and murmured conversation. A walnut desk faced a bay window, framed by velvet emerald curtains eclipsing the view beyond. A thread of unease wove through Una's murky mind.
What is this place?
She gazed at a painting above the fireplace. An elegant woman doing her best holly-go-lightly impression, pulled along by three large wolves on a leash. A small trail of blood dripped from the corner of the woman's mouth.
Creepy. But pretty.
That's exactly what you said when you bought it.
Her brain fog thinned out.
Who are you?
She touched her throat. Her voice sounded different. Not overtly, but definitely pitched deeper by a few notes. The man was in his early 30s, with dark, friendly eyes, high cheekbones, and dyed apricot hair styled like a miniature tidal wave.
I'm Kenzie, your personal assistant and friend. This place is your home. And your voice is different because, well, there's a lot to explain. It's gonna be weird and shocking, but I'm here to help.
Una shuddered and closed her eyes. This was too vivid to be a dream. But what a strange mirage. Surely she was still at the party with Dale and her friends in the mirrored basement. This new reality must be a false one. So better not to give in to the hallucination. Except. A roiling in her body made her double over, as if her inner organs were reassembling themselves. She swallowed hard to keep from being sick, breathed in, and the scream was jarring to Una, even though it came out of her mouth. The last time she'd shrieked at this decibel, two men were dragging her father back onto a boat, his clothes hanging off him in tatters, blowing air into his waterlogged, dysfunctional lungs. 11 years old?
staring into the purple face of Charles Lockhart, who stared back at nothing. That scream was one of alarm at seeing the familiar become foreign. This scream, shaded with decades of maturity, retained notes of that girl's high-pitched plaintive wail.
"Whoa, calm down, please. You're not in danger."
But Una got to her feet and scurried away from him. This action came with terrible new surprises, which distracted her from the stranger. Why was her body heavier, full of twinges like she was wearing a rusty suit of armor? With no mirrors in the room, she couldn't take in the full effect, so the horror was revealed by degrees. There were her hands, which couldn't be hers. These hands had prominent veins, blue road maps extending from the knuckles, and a spatter of brown sunspots. She ran these hands over her body, now clad in a dark skirt and sweater, over the looser skin on her face and neck, over a midsection significantly thicker. None of it belonged to her. Not the hands, the clothes, definitely not the body.
"Una, don't lose your shit. I need you to listen to me."
Kenzie stood. Only there was no time to listen, and Una had her own needs. "I have to get out of here." Except the stranger blocked her path to the door, so she dashed to the window. If they were on a ground floor, she could... A hand on her shoulder. She whirled around.
"Take it easy," he said. "You know me."
Shrinking back against the curtain, she crossed her arms.
"No, no way. A minute ago, I was..."
Her eyes drifted over to a framed photo on the desk, and she nodded at it.
"There."
In the picture, Una was back in her gold dress and leather jacket, shiny-eyed and grinning, surrounded by Dale, Corey, Wayne, and Pam. The camera's flash reflected off the mirrored walls behind them. Kenzie handed her the photo.
"This is one of the things I'm supposed to show you."
"I don't..."
She glanced from the photo to the man before her back and forth.
"I don't remember posing for this." "I'm trying to explain."
"Did you hurt them? Are you going to hurt me?"
Una pressed the frame to her chest, a useless makeshift shield. His eyebrows shot up and he stepped back.
"Of course not. I'm here because you trust me. I'll prove it. You told me about that New Year's party 100 times. Stuff it should be impossible for me to know."
Kenzie reached for the picture.
"Relax. I'll give it right back." "Okay, so that's your band's badass bassist, Wayne. And that's your drummer, Corey, right? You caught him doing coke in the bathroom. He got all emo, swore he'd never do it again. So you promised not to tell the rest of the band. That's frontman Dale, your boyfriend, who gave you a leather jacket just like his, Adorbs, which you called your New York City armor."
Una's mouth formed a stunned O as he tapped on Pam.
"That's your childhood friend with the questionable haircut. I can't remember her name, but that wedge will forever haunt me. Who gave you shit about keeping the London thing hush-hush and tried to convince you to go the nerd route with her? Let's see what else. Oh, right before the countdown, Corey thought the Big Apple was a cherry, and I can't even with that one."
Though puzzled by some of his jargon, his placid tone mesmerized her as he replayed events Una had lived through moments before. She shivered and her knees softened. She staggered over to the desk, clutched it for support.
"I need to sit." "Shit. Was that too much all at once?"
Hastily setting down the picture, he held out an arm. Una didn't take it, but allowed him to lead her to the wingback chairs.
"So."
His pants, made of a shimmery fabric more typical of a prom dress, rustled as he took a seat.
"Now that we're caught up on your recent past, how about I bring you up to speed on the right now?"
The ache in her knees made her grimace as she perched on the chair beside him.
"Have I been kidnapped?"
Why do I look like this?
Her expression was fierce, but her voice wobbled.
It's all going to be okay. I'm here as your co-captain. We're gonna navigate this mess together.
So, I'm not a prisoner?
Of course not. I work for you, and we're besties.
Besties?
Friends.
I don't have any friends as old as you. Kenzie let out a startled laugh.
Hey, I'm only 30. Take it easy.
What the hell is happening?
Una closed her eyes. This new world had already exhausted her. If she wasn't dead, she must be in a nightmare. In which case, she could play along. Wait it out until she woke up. A grim sigh and she opened her eyes, faced the stranger.
What's your name again?
Kenzie.
Why are you here? Why am I here?
Even if this was a bleak fantasy, some framework had to govern it. His pose was serene except for one foot tapping out an erratic rhythm.
Your home. And you asked me to be here.
A silent laugh shook her chest. This room, this person, all of it was like learning a new language.
This isn't my home, and I don't know you. It's gonna be a while before any of this makes sense, if it ever really does. But I'll help you through it.
Kenzie put a hand on her arm, gave it a reassuring squeeze. It wasn't painful, but it was too much. She winced and jerked away.
Please don't touch me.
Hurt flashed across his face as Una got to her feet, backed away toward the door.
I have to go. I have people waiting for me. They'll wonder where I am.
Inch by inch, she moved closer to the exit, hoping he wouldn't lunge for her.
Hang on a sec.
Kenzie rushed to the desk and returned with an envelope, handing it to her from a safe distance.
If you won't let me explain, maybe it'll be better coming from you. Still, there are things in here that'll be hella bizarre.
Hella?
Right, sorry, it means very. My bad.
My bad?
Shit, I did it again. My bad means my mistake. I use silly, outdated slang when I get nervous.
Curiosity interrupted her escape plan.
How outdated? I've never heard any of it before. I don't know, early 2000s?
Kenzie looked away from her widened eyes and fortified himself with a deep breath.
Here's the thing. You're no longer in 1982.
I know that. It's 1983 now.
Not so much. It is New Year's Day, but the year is 2015. So while you just turned 19 on the inside, happy birthday, by the way, your body is the age it's supposed to be in 2015. So chronologically, you're...
He paused to calculate the number, but Una beat him to it.
51?
No. No, no, no. Hella, no.
Right. You're 51 on the outside, but on the inside, you still have the mind and memories of yourself at 19. So it's like you've swapped bodies, only with yourself, at a different age.
He gave her an apologetic look.
You told me to memorize a speech explaining all this, but I was sure I'd be able to wing it. Sorry.
Una stared into the fire. Her face could have been made of marble, it was so pale and still. 10 seconds. 20. Her lips moved as if reciting a silent prayer, except they formed no real words. A glance at Kenzie, whose dark eyes reflected an inner tug of war between panic and serenity. The edges of her mouth twitched down.
So, you're saying I've been through a time machine or something? Or something. Did you do this to me? God, no. You've never been able to figure out how it happens or why.
You know what I think? Her voice was a shaky whisper. I think one of us is insane, and I'm not going to stick around to see if it's you.
She turned and fled the room. As she ran down the hallway, her fingers brushed against silver and blue striped wallpaper, reminiscent of gift wrap. I need to get back to the party and unwrap my presents. Hurrying down a curved staircase, Una caught flashes of modern paintings in primary colors and a chandelier made of bicycle parts. She ended up in a marble-tiled foyer facing an 8-foot mirror. Its reflection made her gasp.
What is this?
An overweight, middle-aged woman gaped at her. When Una put her hand up to her face, so did the woman. And when Una turned her body this way and that, the woman mimicked her gestures. It was like she'd been transported to a sadistic funhouse.
This can't be me.
The face was older but unmistakably Una's. The skin along her jaw sagged, parentheses-shaped grooves lined either side of her mouth, and her once pouty lower lip was deflated. Her nose looked larger, and her hazel eyes had crow's feet. There was no gray in her hair, but it was less lustrous and dyed blonde.
Oh my God! I'm old!
You're not that old. You're just not young,
Kenzie said behind her, then shuffled back at her terror-glazed stare.
I can't be here anymore. I have to go somewhere else. I have to find Dale. Look, I know this is all cray, but...
Cray?
Crazy. God, I'm giving you the worst of modern culture tonight.
He uttered a frustrated growl.
I'm fucking this whole thing up. You warned me it was gonna be tough, but I was all, I got this. I shouldn't have been so dismissive. But now that we're here, please stay. Take a minute to process. I'll tell you what I can about. No, I'm leaving.
Even a nightmare would allow you to exert some control, wouldn't it? If she couldn't wake up yet, at least she could go somewhere else. She went to open the door, but the handle wouldn't budge.
Of course.
Am I locked in?
A glare like a laser beam directed at Kenzie. He ran a hand through his hair, scattering the perfect wave of it.
2014, you thought it would be better to spend some time in this house. You know, acclimate a little before you went out and saw what else has changed.
She let out a disgusted chuckle.
I don't know what that means. Just let me out.
Eyes darting, they settled on a large glass vase. She'd use it if she needed a weapon.
I wish you'd reconsider, but I won't keep you a prisoner in your own house.
My house? Her head snapped up, and she took a fresh look around.
Nope, I've never been here before.
She tugged on the door handle again.
And I don't want to be here now. Please unlock the door.
Her words were meant to be assertive, but they sounded more like pleading.
Can I come with? I don't want you to get lost. No way!
Kenzie darted into a side room and came out with a long black coat and red leather handbag.
At least take these with you. Your wallet is inside with your address, so you'll be able to find your way back. Your phone is in there, too. It's silver, about the size of your hand. Hell knows if you'll be able to figure out how to use it.
He muttered and handed her a slip of paper.
That's my number and the security code for the front door, but I'll be here.
The second digits on the paper caught her eye. 0628. Dale's birthday.
Where was Dale anyway?
She slipped on the coat and took the bag. It was time to find him. As she stepped across the threshold, a frigid gust of wind hit her like a slap in the face.
Please don't wander too far, Kenzie said. If you get lost, call me.
Yeah, right,
Una called over her shoulder, intent on never seeing him again.
Chapter 3. Outside, Una bolted down a short flight of steps, mystified at her sore knees. A quick, backward glance at her supposed house. This was where she lived? This miniature, castle-looking brownstone? She and Dale were supposed to settle down in a Soho loft, a raw expanse they'd turn into a giant living-slash-creative space. No way would she end up in such a stately abode. Of course, it might not be true. Not this house or anything else, Kenzie told her. She still didn't know the real story. She barely knew the first sentence. A curtain on the first floor fluttered, revealing an anxious Kenzie peeking through the window. Una waved him away and began to walk as a merciless wind whipped around. Her fingers grazed the edge of the envelope in her pocket, a letter sure to contain bad news. Forget the letter. I need to find Dale. The block contained nothing but other brownstones, some with gaslights out front, creating an effect more antiquated than futuristic. 2015? I don't think so. But the cars were more modern and streamlined than the ones she was familiar with. Less angular, some more compact, others significantly larger. The vans and station wagons she'd known having received a sophisticated makeover. So the cars are different. That doesn't mean anything. Except other, smaller differences nagged at her. Like street signs with bolder fonts and pedestrian crossing lights that flashed a white silhouette of a person or an orange hand instead of walk or don't walk. The tip of her nose and ears went numb as she walked, and her wool coat protected her body against the bracing temperature only so much. Hopefully, she'd find someplace warm soon. A short while later, she reached an avenue filled with shops, bars, and restaurants. Outside a corner cafe with an iron crow hanging above its door, a man and woman stood smoking, coats open to the wind. They had the unsteady stances and glassy eyes of the inebriated, and their breath created small patches of fog indistinguishable from their exhaled cigarette puffs. Nothing about their appearance screamed futuristic either. If anything, the man's vaudevillian handlebar mustache and suspenders, and the woman's top bun and prim schoolmarmish dress made them seem more suited to an older era. Una approached the couple. "Excuse me, where's the closest subway?" The man pointed down the street.
5 blocks that way.
Happy New Year, slurred the woman.
Is it really 2015? Una couldn't resist asking.
I know. Last year totally flew by, right?
An eye roll, a short sigh, and she flicked her cigarette into the gutter. It still didn't mean anything. The drunk woman could have misheard her. Ever since Una and Dale had been mugged, she'd been scared to ride the subway alone, especially late at night. She focused on this fear as she headed down 7th Avenue, which diverted the bigger fear at the threshold. Had she really ended up 32 years in the future, robbed of her potential and her rightful place in time? In the station, she did a double take at the subway map. It no longer looked like it was designed on an etch-a-sketch, though the modern curved lines did little to improve its clarity.
F train to 4th Avenue, switch to the N, she murmured, memorizing the route to Bensonhurst.
There was an agent inside the station booth. Una gave the middle-aged man behind the safety glass a relieved smile and handed over a $5 bill.
One token, please.
We haven't sold tokens in years. This will get you a Metro card good for 2 rides.
She fought a panicked frown.
Okay, I guess I'll take one of those.
Moments later.
Here you go, ma'am.
The attendant handed her a plastic card. Ma'am? Such a small but jarring reminder. She was no longer 19 to this world. A rumble below signaled an approaching train.
It took a few card swipes, but Una made it through the turnstile in time to catch the F. Her brain was overloaded with information that refused to be sorted into tidy shelves. Maybe she should read the letter. Not yet. Whatever it might explain, the arithmetic was impossible. She couldn't tackle it right now. It was easier to dwell on smaller things without adding them up. Like this updated subway car. So bright and clean, graffiti-free, with no broken windows or flickering neon lights. Or the surprising number of people taking public transportation this late. The N train even more crowded once she transferred. If this really was the future, at least it was safer, less gritty, and not wholly unfamiliar. Even the clothes weren't dramatically different. No puffy sleeves, shoulder pads, or ruffly skirts in sight, but nothing like the Jetsons attire she would have envisioned for 2015. The silhouettes were sleeker, with many form-fitting outfits which looked constricting, uncomfortable. Other ensembles were collages combining several decades of past trends. Enough. Stop procrastinating. Read the letter. She took out the envelope. Una Lockhart, 2015, was spelled across it in block letters. Inside were two pages of unlined paper covered in tidy script with an upward slant, her penmanship recognizable by the quirks of the letters. G's like figure eights, oversized loops on the L's and H's. A high school English teacher had once told Una her uphill handwriting was a sign she was an optimist. As she unfolded the letter, she wondered if this still applied to the version of herself who'd written it. Dear Una, welcome to your future. It won't be so bad once you get to know it. Don't panic. You're not crazy or dead or dreaming. This is your true reality. It really is 2015, and you really are 51 years old. On the outside. The sooner you accept it, the sooner you'll adjust. But there's more to it. What is it, exactly? If Kenzie was able to keep you from running off, he's filled you in. But you're probably reading this on the subway, so I'll tell you. First off, know that none of this is your fault, or anyone else's. There was no science experiment gone wrong, no other explanation for it, and there's no way to prevent or fix it. Here's what's going on.